Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host. Coming up on the program, twin explosions kill at least 118 people at a busy market and bus terminal in Nigeria's city of Jos. Now some Nigerians are calling on the government to start negotiating with Boko Haram.
They believe that the leadership, who is the founder of this movement, Muhammadu Yusuf, was killed, extrajudicial killing, and they want a compensation. That is one issue that is very constant in their negotiation or in their position.
The chairperson of Malawi's Electoral Commission denounces violence witnessed during the general election as voting entered its second day on Wednesday.
The commission condemns in the strongest terms the tendency of some overzealous persons to disturb the polling or tallying process.
Their stories and more to come in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Twin explosions at a busy market and bus terminal in Jos in central Nigeria killed at least 118 people. Most of the victims are women and children vendors. Some analysts say the attacks are meant to drive a wage and damage relations between Muslims and Christians in the country. This has led to some Nigerians to call on the government to start dialogue with Boko Haram Islamists. This report by Thomas Mosh is now presented by Crispin Makdeu.
Deadly attacks were first carried out in the predominantly Christian city of Kano. Then the market in Jos and the villages of Shawa and Alagarno were also targeted. Once again, authorities pointed the finger of blame at Boko Haram. Many Nigerians fear that the terrorists are trying to create a divide between the already fragile relationship between the Muslims and Christians. In Kaduna State, the Muslim and Christian communities each make up about half of the population. Pastor Johanna Buro, who lives in Kaduna, has observed a growing fear.
You begin to see a Muslim begin to blame a Christian, that possibly it is an alliance between Christian Jews and the West against the Hausa Fulani Muslims in northern Nigeria. They begin to feel unsafe with the Christians too, and the Christians begin to blame them too.
Pastor Buro is one of the many Nigerians calling on the government to engage in talks with Boko Haram. His opinion is shared by other religious leaders like Pastor James Wuye and Imam Muhammad Ashafa. In the past decade, Kaduna repeatedly became the scene of political and religious fighting. Several thousands were killed during this period. As a result, the one-time enemies, Wuye and Ashafa, decided to resolve their differences and work towards a peaceful coexistence of the two religious groups. The two leaders facilitated an inter-religious dialogue in Kaduna and were awarded for their efforts by the German Africa Foundation, DAS, in 2013. According to Wuye, the Nigerian government has never made any serious attempts to talk to Boko Haram, something he insists his organization can help with.
There are a lot of personalities that are neutral and that these young people or who are old people or the insurgents can trust. In most cases, the issue is the trust on the side of the government on who to do. But I know there are a lot of volunteering groups, even Interfaith Mediation Center. Our center is one of those groups that can do that. And with our expertise, we have the capacity to get both sides to the table, particularly if we have the political will and the promise of safety of the people that will be involved.
Wuye's colleague Muhammad Ashafa says demands by Boko Haram's leader Abubakar Shekau could be used as a basis to enter into negotiations.
They believe that the leadership, who is the founder of this movement, Muhammadu Yusuf, was killed, extrajudicial killing, and they want a compensation for that. That is one issue that is very constant in their negotiation or in their position. The second issue was the compensation for some of our stakeholders, leadership, who have been killed. That they mention is, for example, the in-law of Muhammad Yusuf, an order whose court, a court of law, has given a verdict of paying certain compensation to, which the state has not done that yet.
However, Bayero Abdullah from the Nigerian Supreme Council of Islamic Affairs thinks politicians are to blame for the Boko Haram insurgency.
Most of the crises we are having in this country, Nigeria, in one or the other, are aggregated by the politicians because of their selfish interests. When they wanted to steal our money, the Muslim and the Christian leaders, they come together. At that time, they don't know about religion. They stole the money. And out of the money, what there will be the dividends of the masses is for them to go and buy ammunition outside the country and import it.
Pastor James Wuye has pleaded with the official religious associations to take on a more moderate tone. Wuye and his fellow group members hope that the campaign to bring back the more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram from Chibok will unite Nigerians rather than divide them.
Crispin McDewu presented that report by Thomas Mosh. The town of Jos sits on a volatile fault line dividing Nigeria's mainly Muslim north from the predominantly Christian south. To get a better understanding of how these two religious communities are coping with increasing attacks, I spoke to Ignatius Kaigama, the Catholic Archbishop of Jos.
The situation is quite worrisome. We didn't expect such terrible occurrence, but unfortunately it has happened. Bomb blasts have occurred, many have died, many are injured, and property destroyed. It's really very, very terrible. We are very appalled and also demoralized.
You say you are demoralized. Is it because President Goodluck Jonathan keeps insisting that the country is winning the war against Boko Haram?
Demoralized in the sense that we just want to live peacefully and happily together, and these people are not giving us a break. And especially Jos, we have had series of crises in 2001. And in the past years, things have calmed down a bit. We didn't experience this kind of attack. Whereas we have had herdsmen and farmers having problems, but not of this magnitude. Now, this is a very deliberate evil attack on the populace. And it is aimed at destabilizing the whole city and, if possible, is an indirect message to Nigeria that these terrorists mean evil. They mean to really destabilize. And that is why I talk of demoralization. We have encouraged our people to the level that we thought. There is great confidence between Muslims, Christians, and also among ethnic groups. But with this, it takes us back a lot. This thing that has happened in Jos is not coming from among the normal Muslim or the normal Christian. It's just coming from people who are evil-minded. That is all I can say.
Who are those evil-minded people you're talking about?
Well, this is where the security agents should be of great help to us. We can only speculate. We can only suspect. Everybody in Nigeria, when there is any violence committed, they say Boko Haram, Boko Haram, but we need to have facts. We need to be confronted with facts that this is done by this group or that group. This is very important, and that is why we feel our security agents should do more to discover who is responsible for this and to find ways of frustrating their own activities so that they don't bring such terrible destruction on Nigeria.
And what do you think of the international intervention in the fight against extremists in Nigeria?
We are quite happy that the international community has suddenly responded and with such passion. It's wonderful. I said this could have come a bit earlier, because the Boko Haram issue has been there with us since 2009. Many people have been killed, many things done that are not right, and it's only now that the international community has woken up to its responsibility. Well, it's better late than never.
The Boko Haram wants to impose an Islamic state under strict Sharia law in Nigeria, but their attacks have also affected Muslim communities. What's your take on this?
That is why we keep saying that the Boko Haram, I think they have some other agenda. The normal Muslims have denied them and said they are not representing their interests. Their values do not correspond to the genuine Islam.
I was speaking to the Catholic Archbishop of Jos in central Nigeria, Ignatius Kaigama.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
Voting in Malawi entered its second day on Wednesday in a tightly contested general election, even after polling stations had officially closed on Tuesday and votes were already being counted. It was the first time in Malawi that voting in general elections was extended to the following day. Troops were also deployed in Blantyre to quell possible violence. For more on the extended election, I spoke to DW correspondent George Muhango in Blantyre.
The mood is a little bit divided because the Malawi Electoral Commission has not even started releasing results. And secondly, is the fact that though other radio stations are broadcasting results, which show that Peter Mutharika of the Democratic Progressive Party, DPP, younger brother to the late Bingu wa Mutharika, is leading, there are some kind of celebrations, of course, in various parts of the country. For Joyce Banda, definitely the People's Party, PP supporters, are, of course, you know, dumbfounded. They can't even speak and they cannot even be at the National Tally Center to start, you know, verifying some of the votes. So it's a mixed bag.
And how was the voting exercise on Wednesday itself?
The voting exercise on Wednesday, of course, it started at around 10 a.m. And the Electoral Commission assured the voters that materials would be available, which, of course, they did to some extent, and that they were updating the media on a number of occasions as regards what is available in the polling stations that did cast their vote.
Now that there was an extension of the voting exercise, will the results be released on Thursday as had been earlier announced?
According to the Malawi Electoral Commission, it is saying that they are going to start releasing the results once they get to 30% of the votes counted so far, and then they'll get to 70% to announce again the partial results before making a final announcement. Even the MEC chairperson, Maxon Bendera, did allude to that during a press conference he conducted earlier on at Komesa Hall, which is the main tally center.
The commission has put in place a mechanism that once the results are in, they'll be verified and shared with all political parties present. Political parties will be given 15 minutes to verify with their monitors. If there is a query, the Commission will wait until that query is resolved. The Commission will give progressive preliminary results at 30 and 70 before final announcement.
Yes, Maxon Bendera, MEC chairperson.
Opposition parties have already cried foul of a possible vote rigging. What evidence have they produced to back up their claims?
In terms of backing up their claims that maybe the ruling party is trying to rig the votes, quite a number of contestants, be it at parliamentary level or a presidential level, they have submitted all those complaints to the Malawi Electoral Commission, which Bendera said that they were looking into it, that they have also discussed such things with lawyers, which the MEC itself hired, so that they look into all those complaints well in advance before releasing the results. What I can confirm is the fact that there haven't been any issues to do with vote rigging from the mouth of MEC itself. They have already claimed that what is being broadcast on private radio stations is just, you know, one of those preliminary results, but that final results have to come from MEC.
I was speaking to George Muhango in Blantyre.
Behind the headlines.
This week's Behind the Headlines takes us to Cameroon, where critics of President Paul Biya are languishing in the country's jails. Most of those in jail are former allies of Biya. They include former cabinet ministers, directors general of parastatals, among others. Their alleged crimes are harboring ambitions to run for the presidency and a threat to his three-decade grip on power. DW's Moki Nzeka has the details from Yaounde.
It is a sad atmosphere at the residence of Henri Ngolu, Cameroon's former minister delegate in charge of finance. He died in prison. He was one of the over 2,000 top government officials arrested and detained on charges of corruption, attempted corruption, and the embezzlement of money. The money was allegedly destined for the purchase of a presidential plane. Following his death, that brought to fore the number of those who have died in detention, there was an outcry. Reports say the detainees had no medical follow-up, but Cameroon's government spokesperson, Issa Chiruma Bakari, denied the claim.
During his detention, Mr. Ngulu benefited regular medical care at the Yaoundé Central Hospital. As his health condition was growing worse, he was transferred to the intensive care unit, where he later passed away.
Shortly before his death, Cameroon's Minister of Secondary Education, Louis Bapes Bapes, was picked up from his ministerial office and locked up in prison for 24 hours. I asked Mbiam Emmanuel, one of the defense lawyers of the arrested top government officials, if it was normal for the government to arrest a minister in active service.
La coutume, la pratique au Cameroun.
The practice in Cameroon has been that ministers are not dragged to court or arrested when they are in active service. Nobody disturbs them while in office. The judges had to wait for them to be relieved of their service by the president before judicial process is engaged. So this minister Bapes affair surprised everyone. It could have created some ministerial instability.
Cameroonians have mixed feelings over the arrest and detentions. Educator Njika Alain says the arrest of the country's top officials are politically motivated.
It looks like a cleaning of those who are opposed to the actual regime. It is a political fight instead of a fight against corruption or embezzlement.
Entrepreneur David Bama says the arrested people should render account.
If it is found out that they stole money or were active in corruption, no matter the reasons they advance, it is right for them to render account. But it is not also impossible for it to be used as a weapon to settle political scores.
Supporters of President Paul Biya, like Professor Ngolengole Elvis of the University of Yaoundé 1, however, argued that the arrests have no political undertones.
There is nothing to tell me that it is politically motivated. I think that the initiative is a deliberate public policy which is intended to make Cameroon a better country. If there are manipulators, we'll know how to take care of those manipulators.
Among those who are in jail are former Prime Minister Inoni Ephraim, Marafa Hamidou Yaya, former Secretary General of President Paul Biya, and Senior Minister for Territorial Administrations Abba Polycarp, and former Minister of Finance. Dr. Richard Tantor is a human rights campaigner working for the Ecumenical Service of Peace in Cameroon.
The treatment that is given to those who are caught, you know, does not give us the impression that the objective is to recover what has been stolen. There have been requests that a special fund be created so that most of this stolen money should be taken from these guys and put in a special fund which is dedicated to probably some kind of infrastructure development in our country. That is not happening, and people are locked up, some for 15 years, and they are released without us knowing exactly whether money has been recovered or not.
That report was filed by Mokinzeka in Yaoundé. South Africa's fifth democratic parliament was sworn in on Wednesday and immediately re-elected current President Jacob Zuma to run the country for the second and final term. Zuma's ruling African National Congress, ANC party, which won the recent national elections by over 60%, used its majority in parliament to ensure a resounding win for their candidate. But as Tuzo Kumalo reports, it was the lawmakers from the Economic Freedom Fighters, led by firebrand Julius Malema, who stole the show.
It was indeed an extremely busy first day at work for South Africa's fifth democratic parliament at the National Parliament in Cape Town. First, all the 400 members of parliament had to be sworn in. President Jacob Zuma and his party deputy Cyril Ramaphosa were in the first group to be sworn in, and the country's Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng did not waste time asking them to take the oath of office.
It's time now to take that oath of affirmation. And if you took an oath, you raise your right hand and say in that language, so help me God. And if it is an affirmation in the same language, I do.
But it was the 25 parliamentarians from Julius Malema's Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, who attracted the most attention. Male lawmakers in this group, including Malema himself, wore red overalls, gumboots and safety hats, while their female counterparts were dressed like maids. EFF party official Floyd Shivambu explained the unusual dressing code of his party members. Most of them became members of parliament for the first time.
It symbolizes that we are truly an organization.
It symbolizes that we are truly an organization which is a vanguard of the working class and the poor. We are unashamedly the forefront of the working class and the poor of South Africa. There is no any other organization that proudly associates itself with struggles of the working class and the poor except the EFF.
Then it was time to elect the Speaker of Parliament. Though it was obvious the ANC's candidate, Baleka Mbete, will cruise to victory, the Democratic Alliance did not allow her journey to Parliament's top seat to be smooth sailing. It elected its own candidate, and this led to a long election by ballot process. But when Chief Justice Mokgweng announced the results, ANC's candidate Mbete came top.
The Honorable Balindlela Zisiwe Beauty Nozimo, 88 votes. Honorable Mbete Baleka, 260 votes.
The ANC also won the post of Deputy Speaker, and then it was time for the new parliament to do its most important business of the day, which is that of electing the country's president. The ANC put forward the name of current president Jacob Zuma, but immediately an opposition member stood up to object against Zuma's nomination. He cited the president's failures in the previous term. The Chief Justice, however, after reading a number of sections from the Constitution, ruled against the objection and, in the absence of a second nomination, went ahead to declare Zuma duly elected.
I accordingly declare the Honorable Jacob Gedleyihlekisa Zuma duly elected President of the Republic of South Africa. Congratulations, Mr. President.
However, with the fifth parliament expected to consider a report on millions of rands in state funds spent on developments at President Zuma's home, and a few party members expressing discontent with his leadership, political analyst Stephen Friedman says it could be a stormy final term for Zuma.
He's going to have some tremendous challenges, incidentally, keeping the ANC together over the next few years. There are regional tensions, there are tensions between factions, and I suspect that he's going to be absorbed with that.
Zuma will be inaugurated president on Saturday and is expected to announce his new cabinet on Sunday.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting from Johannesburg.
Opinion.
And for our opinion slot, we go back to our top story. A twin blast in the city of Jos in central Nigeria killed at least 118 people. Most of the victims were women and children vendors. We heard from the Archbishop of Jos, Ignatius Kaigama, himself condemning the attacks.
Bomb blasts have occurred. Many have died. Many are injured and property destroyed. It's really very, very terrible. We are very appalled and also demoralized.
We now ask, how true is it that such attacks are meant to drive a wedge between Muslims and Christians in Nigeria? Send your opinion by email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a mail to Africa Link DW53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to +491609575951010, and we'll read some of your comments right here at Africa Link.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
And before we leave you, a reminder of the stories that we've covered in the last 25 minutes. Twin explosions killed at least 118 people at a busy market and bus terminal in Nigeria's city of Jos. Voting in Malawi entered its second day on Wednesday amid logistical problems and claims of vote rigging. South Africa's fifth democratic parliament was sworn in on Wednesday and immediately re-elected current President Jacob Zuma to run the country for the second and final term. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany.